HanselMinutes.com. It's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 186, recorded live Thursday, November 5th, 2009. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik RAD Controls, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows Forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. In this episode, Scott talks debugging with Tess Ferrandez.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman, and this is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I'm here in Malmo, Sweden, and I have the opportunity to sit down with Tess Ferrandez, who is an escalation engineer with Microsoft and a well-known ASP.NET debugger.
Hi, Scott.
Thanks for taking the time to talk to me.
Yeah, thank you.
So you are kind of world-renowned as an ASP.NET debugger. You've got a really great blog. I think you said the blog is called If Broke It Is, Fix It You Should.
Yes.
That's the name of your blog?
It's funny because it's a kind of Yoda-ish statement. I've never seen Star Wars.
You've never seen Star Wars?
No.
Did you know that it was a Yoda-like statement when you said it?
Kinda.
It sounded something like that character you've never seen before?
Exactly.
I thought it would be cool to talk about kind of debugging 101, because to be totally honest with you, while I really enjoy your blog, it's kind of like reading a mystery novel.
Yes.
I don't always understand what it is I'm reading.
Okay.
I see that there's usually...
I think you're not alone.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I think sometimes people read your blog because they want to feel smart.
Yes. I think that too.
I know how to hit F5 and I know how to push F9 and that's pretty much the extent of my debugging.
Okay.
Back in the day, I could use like soft ice and do like low-level debugging, but .NET has worked so well, I haven't personally needed to escalate anything.
No, and I think that's the case for a lot of people. That's probably why they read it and not use it.
Mm.
Or maybe they read it also because there are still like tips to be learned about how to do things to not run into issues.
Yeah, exactly. And I know that every once in a while on Vista, I would get a blue screen, and I know that the dump file would appear, memory.dump,
yeah.
And I would need to send it to someone smarter than me, usually probably you.
Actually not, because that would be a kernel dump.
Oh, okay.
So that's a kind of kernel dump is of the whole OS and the whole system.
Okay.
I work mostly with user mode dumps, so dumps of processes.
Okay, so this is good. So let's do a little debugging 101 here. So a kernel dump, you said, is a dump of everything. It's a
yes.
dump of the complete memory of the system.
Exactly.
Okay.
Including all the different processes. So a kernel dump contains everything you're seeing right now.
So a kernel dump then, when it blue screens, that's a complete snapshot in time of what's happening on the computer at that moment that it crashed. Okay. And you work with user mode dumps, which means that when a process crashes, you have a snapshot in time
exactly.
of that process. So what's contained within that dump file?
It depends a little bit on how you create a dump. But if you create a mini dump with full options, which is normally called a full dump, then it contains basically all the memory that you've committed in the process, so everything you've allocated and...
Okay. So if I have an ASP.NET worker process and I've used up, 300 megs of RAM, I'm going to get a 300 meg dump file?
Yeah. So if you've allocated and committed 300 megs, yeah.
Okay.
What's in RAM may not really reflect what you're actually using, because that's just what is paged into RAM right now.
Okay. So you're saying that it's just been, I've committed it, but I haven't filled it up, or I'm not?
No. So if you have multiple processes running on the same system,
okay.
then they're sharing the same RAM, and you may not be able to fit everything you have in the process inside your RAM. So some of it is going to be paged out to disk.
Okay. And when I make the user dump, are those things going to be lifted off the disk and
yeah.
then written out to the process?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So it will reflect a true kind of the virtual memory that I have.
Yeah. In essence, if you've allocated a .NET object, it will be in the dump.
Okay. Now, I've seen you open up Task Manager and then just right click on a process and say create dump.
Yes.
And is that the most common way to make a dump?
It depends on what you're trying to capture. Because if you want to capture a snapshot of right now, like for example, a hang or a performance issue and see what it's doing right now, or if you want to capture a memory dump to figure out how much memory you're using,
mm-hmm.
yeah, create full user dump. If you want to capture a dump, for example, on an exception, you would have to use another tool, either WinDBG's Companion 80+. You can configure that and get memory dumps on exceptions or on crashes.
It's called AD plus?
AD plus, okay. Auto dump plus.
Okay.
Or, so that's just a VBS file that's automating CDB.
Okay, so slow down, because we got a lot of listeners hearing a lot of acronyms. So a VBS file is a Visual Basic Script that's going to go into an automation of a what?
A CDB. CDB is the command line version of WinDBG.
Okay, so WinDBG is the Windows debugger that you get when you install the debugging tools for Windows.
It's a free debugger, and it's a native-only debugger. It doesn't really understand .NET at all.
Okay, really. So WinDBG doesn't understand mixed, what they call mixed mode or managed code. And then CDB is the command line debugger version of WinDBG.
Yeah. So if WinDBG doesn't look scary enough, there is CDB.
Okay. And then CDB is apparently so complicated that I would want to use a Visual Basic script to automate it.
It's not necessarily that it's so complicated. It's that you need to do it so fast that if you had to do it yourself, it would be difficult, so it's easier to use a script to go in. For example, if you would capture a dump on an exception, you can either choose to set a breakpoint on that exception, and when that happens, click something and create a dump, or use a script that captures that.
Okay.
Breakpoint.
Now, why would I, as a developer, want to either right-click and create a dump, or put in a tool that would capture a dump, versus going debug attached to process?
Because I don't think you'll have Visual Studio installed on your ASP.NET server.
Sure. What about like remote debugging?
Even when you're doing remote debugging, when you're attaching, you'll stop the process. And if you have a site that has to be up, then you can't just go in and stop the process and at your leisure look at some values and continue.
Okay, so you're saying if in production I go and attach a debugger to this process, it's really going to have that thing tied up completely.
Yeah.
But you're saying that I can right-click, create dump in production, and the process will just keep running?
Yes.
And how long it'll be down for, as long as it took to create that dump?
Yeah, so that's, I mean, it depends a little bit on how big the process is, but we're talking somewhere around 1-2 seconds.
Really?
Yeah.
So that sounds like that's a really great way for you as an escalation engineer to capture a moment in time and really see what's going
on. Absolutely, yes.
Okay. Do you think that this is a skill that more developers should have?
I'm not really sure, because at first I did think that a lot of people should have these skills, but then I'm not sure if you should spend a whole lot of time actually learning this to a depth where you're debugging like me, because this is my job. I think that most people should be able to just open a simple dump, run 3 commands, and that, yeah.
Okay. Is that a real number of commands? Is there 3 things that people should know?
Yeah, I can choose 3 commands that are good.
Like, I know that I felt quite proud of myself when I had a blue screen, and then I opened, that was, again, a kernel mode dump, and I opened up WinDBG, and I typed in, I think it was like, what is it, bang-analyze-v?
Yeah.
And that's like the standard, I don't know what I'm doing, but figure it out best you can.
Yes.
And then WinDBG will give you a general sense of what it thinks might have happened.
Yes.
And that was the extent of my abilities in WinDBG.
But that's good, because when you run, specifically if you have a crash, a kernel mode crash, if you run analyze-v, what it will do is it will look up where you are, and then it will also match up with bucket, and like Dr. Watson bucket set.
Okay, so let's dig into that a little bit, because you're speaking from a Microsoft person's perspective. Dr. Watson, right, was a little tool that I think lived in Windows, was it 3.1 or did it start?
Yeah.
It was a little picture.
I guess it was the Exchange with error reporting.
Yeah, it was a little man with a little iconic icon of this little doctor with a stethoscope listening into a process.
Okay.
And Dr. Watson is the kind of the what we say when we actually use it as a verb inside of Microsoft, like, oh no, my process has Watsoned, right?
Yeah.
And then it goes and it sends up an error report to a service, a cloud service in the sky. And how does it decide this bucket ID? I've seen this notion of a bucket ID before.
So it looks at a stack that crashed, and then it compares it to other crashes that have happened.
Okay.
And if it fits the same stack, it will put it in the same bucket. And then, for example, when, let's say, 10 people or more have sent in dumps for the same bucket, then it will be investigated. So I'm guessing 10.
Right, to some large number, because I understand that Dr. Watson and this notion of shared buckets of of identical stacks was a big part of what made Windows 7 a much better operating system. Mm-hmm. They really put some statistical analysis in this. And I suppose that, is it true that in your job, you're looking at these kinds of things and reporting to the ASP.NET team?
I'm not necessarily looking at Watson buckets. That's not really what our team does. Our team works on people call in and have issues, and then we report back, for example, if they have bugs in ASP.NET itself.
Do you look and see if this is a repeated bug? Like if they have a bucket, you go, oh, well, we already know about this.
Mm-hmm. Not necessarily from Dr. Watson buckets, but yeah, from our own bug systems. Yeah.
So yeah, I know that the team looks at these buckets and says, well, look, you know, 1,000 people are having this particular problem. We should really dig into that. Yeah. And they would go and they would
And if they do dig into that, then the next time you have an issue like that, you're going to see, hey, there's a reported problem. Go ahead and download this driver.
And in Windows 7, that's what that action center says. It says, oh, we know about this. Go click here and we'll fix it. It's really kind of cool. So help me understand the difference between debug versus release mode. Because I know a lot of people, and I don't think they want to admit it, but maybe the listeners would maybe admit it to themselves, who will put a lot of debug code into production because the perception is that a .NET application that's production, that's in release mode, is hard to debug.
Okay.
So they just say, forget it. We'll just put this in debug mode. We'll leave it there.
Okay.
What are the trade-offs between debug versus release mode?
So I would say because the release mode is optimized and debug mode is not in most cases, if you would actually go in with a .NET debugger like Visual Studio, it may not pop up the exact right line of code. You might be off by a couple of lines or two. But are you really going to do that? Are you really going to attach Visual Studio to it?
Probably not in production.
Yeah. And for tools like WinDBG or taking memory dumps, you don't need that. So the only reason I could see for if you're really, really concerned about line numbers and things is if you're yourself reporting a stack and reporting back code lines or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, I don't see much of any reason to have debug mode on the server. And for ASP.NET, it's even worse because debug mode kind of implies that you want to let a .NET debugger attach to it and be able to debug it fine.
Right.
And because of that, timeouts are not honored.
What does that mean?
Like, for example, if you set an ASP.NET timeout, default timeout is like 1.5 minutes for any ASPX page.
And so if a page takes too long, it'll shut it down.
Yeah, you'll see like page timeout or whatever. That does not happen if you have debug mode.
Oh, no.
And the reason, of course, is because you attach a debugger, you can't have it shut down.
Right, you could be debugging for 20 minutes.
Yeah. So that doesn't happen. You don't optimize the code. And that may or may not be a big performance issue for, most sites really don't have that type of performance, needs.
Right.
But one thing that does make a big difference is that if you run in debug mode, you'll create one assembly per ASPX page. So they'll all be...
Also, many assemblies gets created.
Yeah.
If you had hundreds of pages, you're going to have hundreds of little tiny assemblies.
Yes.
And in release mode, you just get one.
Mm-hmm.
Ah.
Or rather, if you have debug equals false in webconfig.
Okay.
So there's a bit of a difference of if you say debug release mode versus debug equals true in ASP.NET.
Yeah, that's a very interesting point. So you're saying that the drop-down list in Visual Studio switching between debug and release
that
is one thing.
That has nothing to do with debug equals true.
That tells the compiler for your code behind pages what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then saying debug equals true or false in the compiler section of the web config tells the
JIT debugger. JIT compiler.
How it should treat those pages.
Yes.
Interesting. Hey, everybody. This is Scott coming at you from another place and time. No doubt you probably bump into testing tasks now and then in your work. And writing functional tests is probably not your favorite thing. It's kind of difficult, takes time, and the results can be dubious. Well, get ready to start liking tests thanks to Telerik with the new WebEye testing framework. Building web automation tests is a breeze. You've got code automation with advanced ASP.NET AJAX and Silverlight applications. You can write a single test, have it executed against multiple browsers at once. You benefit from a rich API. There's link support, integration with Visual Studio unit testing, also NUnit, XUnit, and MBUnit. not to mention the free wrappers for Telerik RAD controls for ASP.NET, AJAX, and Silverlight, all shipping with Telerik's new testing tool. One of the best features, the WebEye testing framework, which is developed by Art of Test, is it's absolutely free. If you've already got hooked on WebEye testing framework, start using it right away. Go to Telerik.com for more info. Thanks a lot. So it sounds like putting debug mode in a website is just a bad idea altogether.
Yeah.
There's really no good reason to do that.
No, not really.
But if something bad happens, really, other than really good logging and tracing, I'm pretty much limited to dumps then at that point, am I not?
Yeah.
So what are some of the classifications of things that could go wrong in ASP.NET that it would cause me to want to take a dump?
Yeah.
So, and see, that's funny. We always say that, take a dump, but it makes everybody laugh.
Yeah. In fact, yesterday I was called out on that and I was like, please say take a memory or create a memory dump. Most of the cases I get are either high memory usage, performance issues, or my process crashed, or I have this really weird exception that I have no clue why it happened.
Okay. So memory issues, this is like mostly leaks, like I'm using up too much memory?
Yeah. So in .NET, there is like this feeling that I should not be able to use up too much because I have the garbage collector.
Right.
Well, the garbage collector will only collect garbage, but it doesn't collect things that, well, how does it know it's garbage? You're not using it anymore. You're not referencing it anymore.
Right.
So most memory issues in .NET applications are really you're referencing things that you may not even know that you're referencing.
Okay, so that means that if you took a memory dump and looked at it, you would find a lot of objects and of a certain type,
mm-hmm.
and then you'd say, "Why do I have a million strings?"
Yes.
And then what do you do?
Then, so first off, like you said, go ahead and look at what you're using it for or what objects are on the heap and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then for each of them, you can use, in WinDBG, you can use commands like gcroot. That's a command from the SOS extension.
Okay, so SOS is actually called son of strike.
Yeah.
Which really means nothing. This is the funny thing about Microsoft, acronyms.
It does mean something.
Does it really?
Yeah.
Oh, tell me,
so,
please.
Let me just get back to that, because So you would run a command to figure out why it's still being referenced. So that's what you would do.
Also, it'll tell you that. So you say, I've got these objects.
Yeah.
I want to find out why.
Who is still referencing them.
Okay. And it'll actually walk it back and tell you who allocated that.
Yeah.
And when I say who, is that an object or is that a call
that's
step?
That's, for example, no, it's an object. So it's either a static object that has a reference to something that has a reference to something.
Okay.
Like, for example, a static object that has a reference to the cache. In your cache, you have session variables.
Mm-hmm.
Your session variables are holding on to this object.
I see.
So you'll see the object, not the stack.
And when I see these things on your blog, I see small abbreviation commands. Like you said, was it gcroot?
Yeah.
As a command? That's just... Are there dozens of these or hundreds of these things I have to memorize to figure this out? I mean,
so
I'm trying to take it from analyze-v to get somewhere in your direction of ability.
So I would say, basically, there are maybe five commands that you really want to know, or mm-hmm. three or five. Like, you want to know what the stacks of the threads are.
Mm-hmm.
This one command is called CLR stack.
Okay.
You want to know the objects that are in memory, dump heap stat.
Okay.
And you want to know, for example, looking at a specific object, dump object, and then gcroot to figure out who's holding onto memory. And that's really, like with those commands, if you don't want to go any deeper, you'll get a lot of information just using those.
Really?
Commands.
So using those five commands will probably get me a lot of what I need.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's memory.
Yeah.
And
so back to Son of Strike.
Oh, yeah, Son of Strike.
Yeah.
So this is an extension to WinDBG.
Yes.
Okay.
So the name comes from... in the very beginning, you had, the CLR was called Lightning, or that was the working name for the CLR, for the core.
Right, the code name for the core runtime.
Exactly. So they had this debugging extension called Strike, as in Strike the Lightning.
Oh, a lightning strike. Okay.
Yeah. And this is kind of an offspring of that. So this is Son of Strike.
Okay. And then now we say SOS.
Yeah.
Okay.
So now it's just a call for help.
That was a long time ago. That's like 9 years ago.
I know.
How long have you worked for Microsoft?
Oh, a long time.
Wow. So the memory thing makes sense. The idea that I can take a snapshot in time and I can wander around in the snapshot and I can see these objects and figure that out. That makes sense to me. But on a perf using a dump, a moment in time, to identify a perf problem.
Yeah.
How do I do that?
Well, you can either just look and see what... So when it comes down to a perf issue, it's basically, what am I doing and why is it taking so long? That's okay. Really what it comes down to. So looking at the threads to figuring out, like to figure out what they're doing, so what the .NET call stacks are.
Mm-hmm.
And preferably, if it's just a perf issue, something taking a long time, then maybe taking a couple of memory dumps during that time to figure out if things are moving along or not, or if things are really blocked.
I see. Now, if something is, quote-unquote, taking a long time, aren't there kind of two categories of what could be causing that? One would be, I'm waiting for something, in the sense of there's a concurrency issue, we're in line.
So that's basically what we call an idle hang.
Okay, idle hang. So a bunch of threads are waiting for one thread to let them in.
Yeah, or an external resource or anything like that.
And then I would think that the other one would be, I have an inefficient algorithm. And mm-hmm. I think that would be difficult to tell from looking at it.
Yeah, so that's pretty much where you have to take multiple dumps to see maybe how many iterations you're doing in this particular algorithm. Or some of the more common ones on with busy hangs are high CPU and garbage collection. When you allocate a lot of large objects, or if you do make a lot of full garbage collections, that causes high CPU and garbage collection, or something like using inefficient regular expressions.
Mm. So an idle hang is waiting in line for someone to let me in, and then a busy hang is I'm just doing a lot of work that I don't need to be. And I could be doing a busy hang that is my code weight doing a lot of work, or it could be indirect in the sense that I'm making a lot of work for .NET.
So I would say if you can reproduce a performance issue, then you're better off doing some kind of profiling in Visual Studio, for example. But if you can't reproduce it on a test machine,
then
you would have to take.
So if it's a busy hang that only happens in production, then I would want to do multiple dumps. But, you know, it's funny how few people use profilers.
Yeah.
It really is a shame. The profilers are just amazing things.
Yeah.
.NET lets you instrument so much. And then
in Visual Studio, there are, even in 2008, and my feeling is that it's gotten even better in 2010, the way profiling works.
Mm-hmm.
There is, for busy hangs, you would want to do the CPU profiling.
Mm-hmm.
And for idle hangs, you would want to do the instrumented profiling. So the CPU profiling basically goes in, and looks at, every now and then it goes in and looks at the stack and see where you're spending most of your time. Whereas instrumented profiling is more elapsed time, so how long it took for a certain function to do.
Now, I could be spending my time in my own code, or I could be spending my time in Microsoft code. Mm-hmm. And when I'm looking at a call stack, if I've got no, correct me if I'm wrong here, if I've got no symbols, I'm just going to see offsets in my stack.
Yeah, for the native, like for the stuff that's not your code.
Okay, so
Yes, the native. Even for .NET code, you don't need symbols.
So this is the part I'm confused about.
Mm-hmm.
What do I need? I mean, what is a PDB for? Because I've heard you say this before, that I don't need symbols.
Yeah.
But what are these PDB for? I mean, do I need them or not?
Yeah, so for a native, so non-.NET stuff, you do need them because there is nothing in that method or nothing in that object that tells you what the function name is. So if you don't have symbols, so symbols, it basically is a database that says this address means this function.
Okay.
And the debugger goes in and says, okay, so I'm at this address. Where would I be?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, at this function plus some offset.
Okay.
For .NET code, you don't need that because that's all built into metadata in the objects themselves.
Okay. So do I not need PDBs at all in .NET? Well, what are they created for?
Well, they're not needed for debugging with WinDBG, but for example, for debugging with Visual Studio, you'll need them because they contain information about, file names where your code is, like line numbers where this function is, that kind of stuff.
Okay.
Parameters.
So unmanaged code, I need the PDBs not only for line numbers and file names, but for offsets to method name mapping.
And depending on what PDBs you have, like if you have private or public ones, they may or may not contain type names, parameter names.
Names of locals?
Yeah.
Okay. So so I could be in my code or I could be in Microsoft's code.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like now that I can look at the Microsoft source code for the .NET framework, while I've got the function names of I could be in a regular expression. I could be in system.regex or something like that. I still would like to get the line numbers then. So I would want to hook up a symbol server. Mm-hmm. Is that correct? To bring those PDBs down?
Yeah. But, and the .NET symbols are usually not up there. So that's mostly for native.
Okay. So where do I get those symbols? Are those already on my system? I'm pretty sure they are up there, actually.
Yeah. Okay,
I think that there's a Microsoft public symbol server.
Yeah, no, there is one, but I'm wondering, do they have things for example, system web?
I think they do.
Okay.
I think if I go tools options and I go into the debugger section, there's a series of checkboxes, and I can go and say use the public symbol server.
Yeah, but I'm thinking like for example, for WinDBG, I don't recall if they show these. They do show the names?
I'm pretty sure that they do.
Yeah.
And I think what it does, at least for the mix mode stuff, is it'll bring down the PDBs for system.web and for all those different things.
Yeah.
And then you're saying that the symbol server doesn't just contain .NET stuff. It contains
native.
So if I get down into ntdll.dll or something low-level kernel 32, it'll bring those down too.
Yes.
And that gives me the benefit of having a call stack that shows me method names all the way up the stack, not just to a point.
Exactly, yes.
Okay.
And the symbol server is basically just, like, so if you have your own symbols, you would just maybe put them in a directory and set up that as part of your symbol path.
Right, and that was my next question. If I run a large enterprise, and we did this at my last job, I want to set up a share such that when I have a continuous integration server that's doing my builds, I want to copy all those PDBs over there.
So there is a different, like, you can either put them in a directory, and then it'll be recognized by name. But for a symbol server is basically kind of like a folder structure where you might have, you know, multiple PDBs for MS Core Works or for NTDLL, depending on operating system or depending on framework version and everything.
Right. And there's a certain structure that those folders need to be. They include a hash of the file so that you could have multiple versions side by side.
And that's so that you can debug dumps from everywhere on the same machine, or debug processes with different framework versions and stuff like that. And you can set that up for your own company too. You can set up a symbol server that works, like, if you have different versions.
So you can have multiple paths that you can search. You can search the Microsoft symbol server and then your own.
Yeah, absolutely.
Where's a good place for people to get started with debugging if they're an IIS and ASP.NET person?
So apart from WinDBG, there is also this tool called DebugDiag. DebugDiag 1.1 is the one that's out now, and it's actually just released with a 64-bit version.
Okay, cool.
What it does is it helps you not only to gather memory dumps in a very easy way, where you can configure it to take dumps on certain exceptions or crashes or whatever, but it also helps you analyze memory dumps. So you can, it has a hang analyzer, it has a memory analyzer. You can write your own scripts. So I wrote a script on my blog, blogs.msdn.com/tests, where it's a script for debugging .NET memory leaks. That shows the most common things, and you just basically open your dump up with that script. Mm-hmm. It just gives you information you need without even opening WinDBG.
Now, I understand that there's some improvements, though, with specifically around dump files in 2010 that's going to make some of these things maybe not obsolete, but certainly less often used.
Absolutely. So not so much in the memory space. So you can't currently, at least with Visual Studio 2010 beta 2, you can't look at .NET objects in a heap.
Okay.
But it's got a very nice way of showing, like, the stacks moving to source code, and we did a recording of that to
For Channel 9. We'll put up a video of this for Channel 9 to demonstrate that. But in a nutshell, for busy hangs and idle hangs, this gives you a beautiful visualization.
Yeah. I think so. You just open it up with Visual Studio. You look at something called parallel stacks that will show you all the stacks of all the threads. And it's awesome. I can't even describe it in words.
Yeah. I mean, this seems like a large portion from what you showed me. And again, we'll have a link up on Channel 9 at the Hansel Minutes on 9 section. This is going to make a huge chunk of your job less text mode and more graphical.
I would say for me, I'll probably stick with WinDBG. But
really? Why?
Because it's
Because this is so amazing.
Fast,
you showed
easy.
Me this. Isn't it?
Yeah.
But it's the speed of the text mode?
Yeah. And it's the speed, and it's the fact that sometimes you need to go in and look at the native objects that you can't really access still in.
You know what would be interesting would be to figure out if you could, because you can create extensions now to Visual Studio, if you could write something that would bring that WinDBG command line in and do a split screen.
So you can write a lot of the commands, for example, for SOS. You can use them in the immediate window in Visual Studio.
Really? And is there stuff on your blog about how to use SOS in the immediate window?
Mm-hmm.
Very cool.
So I think you wrote a post on that.
I may have. I've written a lot of stuff.
Maybe a couple of years ago.
Cool. Yeah. Well, your blog is a great resource for this kind of stuff. You've got all sorts of stories about adventures in debugging. You've got scripts and resources that people can check out.
And labs, if you want to try debugging hangs or memory leaks or things.
Right. Now, I noticed that you did this recently. You put up a series of labs where you can actually, we can download a dump and we can go through it and try to learn ourselves.
Or actually download a website that has.
That will make a dump.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Very cool. Well, thank you so much, Tess, for sitting down with me today.
Well, thank you.
Cool. Well, be sure to check out Tess's blog at blogs.msdn.com/Tess. I'll put links for all of that, as well as the tools that we've talked about up on the show site. This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I'll see you again next week.